Okay, Chair, you're on the record.
Okay, thank you. Well, we're up a little past 9 o'clock, so I'll call the regular meeting of April 17th to be the Alaska Energy Authority Board to session, to order. Roll call, please.
Okay, yes, sir. Commissioner Sandy?
Here.
Commissioner Crum?
Here.
Mr. Mathiason?
Here.
Ms. Miller?
Here.
Mr. Seidman?
Here.
Mr. Izzo?
Here.
Mr. Mitchell?
Here.
And Chair Copeland?
Here.
You have a quorum, Chair.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion for the approval of the agenda.
So moved. Make a motion to approve the agenda.
Jen Miller, second.
Okay, are there any proposed additions, deletions, or corrections? Okay, hearing none, the agenda will stand approved as submitted. Prior minutes from the January 30th regular meeting. Entertain a motion for approval.
Jen Miller, motion to approve.
Tony Izzo, second.
Okay, any discussion or suggested corrections to the minutes? Okay, hearing none, they'll stand approved as submitted. Now, public comments, please.
Okay, is there anybody in the room that would like to make a public comment? Okay. Is there anyone on the phone that would like to make a public comment? Please press star 9 and you'll be recognized. Okay, Chair, there are no public comments at this time.
Okay, thank you. And we have no committee reports for this meeting. Old business, Bradley Lake Renewable Energy Certificates. Curtis.
Yes, we have a couple of legal opinions to look at based on one that we had received from another utility. And so I suggest we go into executive sessions for legal matters.
Okay, thank you. And board, there's a couple of draft recommended motion if we'd like. Okay, Jen.
Jen Miller, I move that the board enter into an executive session to discuss confidential financial matters and confidential attorney-client communications related to Bradley Lake Renewable Energy Credits. This is supported by the Open Meetings Act, AS 4462310, which allows a board to consider confidential matters in executive session. In this case, the board believes that these are subjects which would have an adverse effect upon the finances of AEA and are protected by law due to rules governing personal privacy and certain business information.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor of going into roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Sandy?
Yes.
Commissioner Crum?
Yes.
Mr. Mathiason?
Yes.
Ms. Miller?
Yes.
Mr. Seidman?
Yes.
Mr. Izzo?
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell?
Yes.
Chair Copeland?
Yes.
The motion carries, Chair.
Okay, thank you. We'll go into executive session. We'll just give a couple of minutes here for...
Okay, Chair, you're back on the record.
Okay, thank you. I want to advise that the board has not taken any formal action on the matters discussed while it's in executive session. Under old business, under this item, we do have a draft motion from AEA staff, and I'd entertain a motion to consider that.
Jen Miller, I move to consider the draft resolution. Would you like me to read it?
Yes, please.
Okay. I move that the Alaska Energy Authority, through its executive director, register renewable energy certificates, RECs, associated with the Bradley Lake project. This motion covers Bradley RECs for vintage years up to, but not including, the time when Alaska entities may use the RECs to meet the State of Alaska Renewable Portfolio Standard requirements, should such requirements ever be implemented. The Bradley Lake Hydro Project is owned by the Alaska Energy Authority, and therefore the RECs are owned by AEA. REC proceeds are to be used exclusively to reduce the cost of energy for the 550,000 Alaskans living on the rail belt by putting the money towards Bradley Lake Hydro Project and capital expenses for the Dixon Diversion Project. This may include, if necessary, advocating for a BPMC budget amendment that adds an expense for Dixon project development equal to but not exceeding the value of the REC proceeds. Additionally, I applaud the utilities and AEA for collaborating to raise over $20 million over the next 20 years without any negative impact for ratepayers for the Dixon Diversion Project.
Is there a second?
Mr. Chair, I'll second the motion.
Okay.
Doug Mitchell, for the record.
Okay, second, Board Member Mitchell. Discussion. Mr. Izzo.
Sure. I think my comments will lead to a friendly amendment or the attempt to make one. And it's the second sentence. This motion covers Bradley RECs for vintage years up to, but not including the time when Alaska entities may use RECs to meet State of Alaska Renewable Portfolio Standards, should such requirements ever be implemented. I understand the intent. I agree with it. My concern is that there is current legislation that will increase rates across the rail belt by over $52 million, that the testimony in the legislation is not included any utility expert, that there has been a tremendous amount of misinformation or lies by omission regarding the testimony that's been presented so far. I would propose that this sentence read, this motion covers Bradley RECs for vintage years up to, but not including the time when the State of Alaska law changes causing the sale of the RECs to increase rates for Bradley Lake participants.
Can you say that again, please?
Yeah, so, but not including the time when State of Alaska law changes causing the sale of the RECs to increase rates. And we could say increase rates for Bradley Lake, you know, consumers. I just think it's a broader effort that isn't as specific to a renewable portfolio standard. There is one pending before the legislature right now. It is not acknowledged nor looked at the President Trump's executive order from a couple weeks ago that our legal review at my organization indicates, is likely to cause lawsuits in opposition to the law if passed anything close to as it is, because it would violate that executive order and significantly increase rates across the for the 550,000 rail belt consumers.
Okay, so you're proposing that as a
make it as a motion for as a friendly amendment.
Yeah, and could I just have you repeat that, Mark, so we make sure we have it right.
So the motion would, this is Mark Billings, the Alaska Energy Authority, the amended motion would start, I move that the Alaska Energy Authority, through its executive director, register renewable energy certificates associated with the Bradley project. This motion covers Bradley RECs for vintage years up to, but not including, the time when State of Alaska law changes causing the sale of the RECs to increase rates for Bradley consumers. The Bradley Lake Hydro Project is owned by the AEA, and therefore the RECs are owned by AEA. REC proceeds are to be used exclusively to reduce the cost of energy for the 550,000 Alaskan Alaskans living on the rail belt by putting the money towards Bradley Lake Hydro Project and capital expenses for the Dixon Diversion Project. This may include, if necessary.
Okay. That's fine. Okay. I just wanted to capture the amendment. So, okay, so we have a motion to amend. Is there a second?
Is it friendly? Sorry.
Jen Miller, second.
You have a motion and a second to amend the motion, I'll call it, or is this going to be in resolution form, do you think?
It's a motion.
A motion. Okay, yeah. It's just an action item. Okay.
Just following up on a previous resolution.
Okay. Okay, gotcha. So a discussion on the amendment.
I would like to understand the word significantly increase and if that's editorializing or if that's a fact. I want to just understand as we do the amendment of the motion, I agree with the premise. I'm just trying to wondering if by making such bold statements we're making editorializing. And then point two is that how does this affect the legal writing of the main effort on the resolution as drafted? So those are more questions than anything else.
I'll speak to that because that was also my concern. I would be a little concerned with saying, because the way the amendment's written, it presupposes that those costs will increase, but I've seen a lot of RPSs that are written to exclude pre-existing and only include new generation and stuff, so I'd hate to send a signal to the state saying that, you know, you're going to increase our costs here when that may not be the case in the way they're structured. But that was just my thought. I'd be inclined to vote against the amendment as stated just because of that. So further discussion?
Through the chair.
Robert. Yeah, Robert.
I like the motion. I would want to make it higher level if I were the king for a day. I would want to just leave it to until such time that Alaska law changes and leave it at that, and not talk about Alaska Renewable Portfolio Standards because we don't know if that is even going to be the name of it. And so we're really dialing in and giving legislators or others a name and a potential law when really we're just looking at whether or not Alaska's law does come into effect. That would be my only comment.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Izzo.
Yeah, I appreciate that from Member Seidman. I no pride of authorship. It was just a very quick my amendment was just a quick stab at trying to provide some clarity. I would certainly admit that it may add as much, if not more, confusion, but he did a better job of articulating, I think, that you know, what we want is not to tie ourselves to something that I think is controversial. It's a lightning rod issue, and let's just stick to Alaska law. So I'd, you know, gladly rescind my, you know, friendly amendment or rescind support for it in exchange for Mr. Seidman's.
Since we're on that thread, other discussion on this kind of particular thread?
Mark, if you're going to, this is Mark Billings, Alaska Energy Authority. If you're going to say Alaska law, you should probably say Alaska law regarding RECs, RPS, or similar matters, because the law is definitely changing. Quick.
Through the chair, I agree with that.
Okay, and I'm seeing a nod there, Tony. Okay, I kind of, yes, thank you, Mark. And I like that as well, because it kind of anonymizes a little bit, but it's hard to consider this and the objections to, you know, the sale of these REC credits by AEA without acknowledging that RPS is kind of one of the core issues that was brought up. So I think it's good to include it, but I like that. So, and would entertain an opportunity to withdraw the motion and restate it if you'd like to with your second, Ms. Rizzo. And or we can vote on the amendment as presented and move forward.
Tony Izzo, for the record, happy to withdraw my friendly amendment.
You can do a friendly amendment.
A
friendly amendment, okay. if the other two makers accept it.
Yeah, she had the second, so she'd have to agree.
Jen Miller, I second the friendly amendment to change the language.
Okay.
As Mark suggested.
Okay.
Yeah, then reread it.
Could you read that back to us, Mark?
So I was just going to read the first and second sentences. All of the changes
are in the second sentence. I'm going to read just the first and second sentences. It says, I move that the Alaska Energy Authority, through its executive director, register RECs associated with the Bradley project. This motion covers Bradley RECs for vintage years up to, but not including, the time when state of Alaska law changes regarding RECs, RPS, or similar matters.
So you will make that motion, Tony?
Is that your motion? And second?
Yes.
Okay.
So moved.
Great. Okay. And discussion, board?
Jen Miller, second.
Oh, Jen. Okay. Thank you. Discussion, board? On that amendment?
I think the motion and the second was done, but Robert Siegman helped us move this along, so I just want to put that on the record.
Okay. I think I heard that you would support that, and so would I. Any other discussion? Okay, hearing none, roll call vote on the amendment.
Okay, Commissioner Sandy?
Yes.
Commissioner Crum?
Yes.
Mr. Mathiasson?
Yes.
Ms. Miller?
Yes.
Mr. Seidman?
Yes.
Mr. Izzo?
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell?
Yes.
Chair Copeland?
Yes.
The motion carries, Chair.
Okay, so the amendment to the main motion has been approved. I would just point out that there was a typo in the written one here, but that typo was corrected in the statement of the original motion. But back to the main motion, discussion on the approval of this motion. Any further discussion? Mr. Izzo.
Yes, I want to just point out, I think there's a clarification we need to confirm, or maybe the way it was read into the record covered this, but on the seventh line of it, authority, and therefore the RECs are owned by AEA versus owed.
That's right. That's how the motion was stated.
Okay, perfect. I just wanted to confirm.
Okay, great. Okay. Thanks for that clarification. Any further discussion? Mr. Mitchell.
Yeah, I just wanted to have some comments on the record because we came out of executive session. I feel that we should move forward on this motion. Money and time value of interest is being lost on the matter. I think the review of the legal record showed that since there isn't a state law on RECs, it goes back to contractual law. The contractual law, you know, really needs to specifically say that you're not only selling energy, but you're selling the RECs, and it's silent. So I feel AEA is in a strong position of contractual law. And I want to make sure that as we're going forward, that I think this draft motion helps alleviate some of the future concerns, and we allow things to evolve, and we can always readdress back. But I'm gonna support this motion.
Okay. Further discussion? Hearing none. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Sandy?
Yes.
Commissioner Crum? Commissioner Crum? Mr. Mathiasson?
Yes.
Ms. Miller?
Yes.
Mr. Seidman?
Yes.
Mr. Izzo?
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell?
Yes.
Chair Copeland?
Yes.
The motion carries, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Motion is approved as amended. Next item is new business. And this item is regarding financing options in Dixon Diversion in the HVDC line. And before we discuss this, you saw information in your packet, and you saw that there's quite a variety of financing options. I think it's appropriate for the AEA board to consider those financing options, and I'd like to have an ad hoc committee just to review those. Committee of three members. I do want to point out that, and, you know, I'll entertain volunteers, I think is a good approach. But I do want to point out that this time of year, and particularly, I'd see doing this in a fairly timely manner while the matter's in front of us. It would be an ad hoc committee, so it would just be to look at that one specific thing, and then the committee would dissolve. But I would like to point out that state commissioners, especially potentially Commissioner Crum, it might pose a conflict for them. It also lands in a very extremely busy time of their workload with the legislature in session. So I would suggest that the balance of board members might consider volunteering. But I'd like to just do that now, is solicit volunteers to serve on that committee of three. And Mr. Mitchell.
Yeah, I'd volunteer, Mr. Chair, for that committee.
Thank you. And I know that we do have a standing committee now of the personnel committee, and some of your members on that. So I'll entertain and give the opportunity for others, but I'd be willing to serve on this ad hoc committee as well if there aren't two other volunteers. Would any
others? Mr. Chair, I would raise my hand to the chair to volunteer for this as well.
Okay, thank you. Others? Okay, then I'll volunteer for the third, and just let the record reflect that we formed an ad hoc committee to consider financing options. And, of course, AE has a long history of collaborating with the BPMC and railbed owners and stuff as they advise policy. But I think for the AEA's fiduciary responsibility, it's a good idea for the board to take a look at this and look at options and form a board recommendation for the board. So with that, under new business, we have financing options.
All right. On that topic, and thank you very much for the subcommittee. This is something that we as a team, and Mark especially, and I have been trying to work on. There, we have a lot of different options, and we have really two distinct projects going on, being the Dixon diversion, and then obviously the GRIP, where there's federal dollars, and there's nothing in the Dixon diversion as far as federal dollars at this time. I will say that the state Senate did, in their capital budget, put $6 million towards the Dixon diversion. We had asked for 6.5. We had a conversation, and we took a haircut, which I'm fine with that, considering where the state budget is. And on the Dixon diversion, you know, the most obvious is revenue bonds. Looking at those, that's how we funded Bradley. It's a conversation that we need to have with the railboat utilities, is because my assumption is they're all interested in saying buying in at the same level of their water that they receive today. I don't know that to be the case, but that's obviously going to be one of the first questions we have with the utilities, is where are they at as far as in that. So there's revenue bonds. There's been discussions of a state GO bond, a general obligation bond. There's also some legislators who have talked about state appropriation. Don't know where their leprechaun is, but they might have one. We've had several entities reach out to us on a public-private partnership on that. So that's one that we've looked at. And then the Department of Energy does have low-cost interest loans available to the tune of around 4%. T plus 3/8. So we just need to kind of, we want to look at those and look at all of our options, discuss it as a group, so we have a kind of an effort before the board that we've vetted these out, and it's just not AEA's recommendations, but actually we have board participation. Very same thing with GRIP, the Kenai Beluga HVDC line. Of course, our needs are $143 million. The same options are available on those two. But again, we just need to have that conversation and see what the best package is to bring them to you. And I know some, just to let you know, these are two very distinct projects. There might be some similarities. Maybe they can get combined at some point. But for our point right now, just wanting to make sure we see the options, present them to the board. So I really appreciate that. And that's what I just want to kind of explain, that we're looking at all six. So we're looking at 12 different options for two projects. And so we've got to narrow them down.
Thank you. And Director Thayer, when we discussed the board having an ad hoc committee, I think you'd indicated your thought was that AEA could just give a presentation to that committee and explain the different options and some of the trade-offs. So just for Mr. Mitchell and Seedman's visibility, that would kind of be the meeting. So,
yeah, I what we would anticipate is that we would have a presentation or presentations kind of what we're doing and kind of what our favored choice is as we go forward. Because if you think about it, if we're filing for FERC in January on Dixon and we hope to have answers in 12 months, we're 18 months out from a go, no-go decision, and really nice to have the financing all lined up. And so we hit that construction window. And so that's why this timing, even though it seems like it's far out, it's actually a lot sooner than we think.
Okay, thank you. Discussion on this item? Mr. Seidman.
Yeah, through the chair. One thing I'd like to take into consideration before presentations are made is the ITC. I know on new business we do have an agenda item discussing the Maintaining and Enhancing Hydroelectric and River Restoration Act. With that, the IRS has different levels of investment tax credits, and those levels are based on, you got domestic content and other things. But with that, there is, my understanding, there is a penalty for tax-exempt bonds. So I would like the staff to consider those penalties, because when we're talking potentially $350 million and 50% of that potentially paid for by the ITC, we would want to make sure we don't penalize ourselves by way of tax-exempt funding.
Thank you for that suggestion. I see Director Thayer nodding here, so appreciate that. Other discussion? Okay. Do you still have your hand up? Okay, I see it. Great. Okay, next order of business is director comments.
No, we have a resolution.
Director Thayer. Oh, do we have a resolution? Oh, sorry. I skipped down a little too far. Thank you. So next action item is resolution 2025-04. It's a resolution of the Alaska Energy Authority requesting Congress to support and maintain energy investment tax credits. Whereas the Alaska Energy Authority is a public corporation of the state of Alaska, the state's energy office, and the lead agency for statewide energy policy and program development, and has the mission to reduce the cost of energy in Alaska. And whereas AEA Alaska Utilities and Alaska Energy Developers are pursuing energy tax credits that are critical to the success of their respective energy projects. And Alaska Energy Future, AEA, Alaska Utilities, and Alaska Energy Developments, such as Bradley Lake Dixon Diversion Project, appreciate the continued support of the current tax code, which creates security and stability for projects already in planning and development. These energy projects reduce energy costs for Alaskans and promote domestic resource development. And whereas funding for Alaska Energy Authority through investment tax credits is consistent with Presidential Executive Orders 14153, Unleashing Alaska's Extraordinary Resource Potential, Energy, Water, Mining, Seafood, and Data Processing. Executive Order 14154, Unleashing American Energy, Firm Baseload Hydropower. Executive Order 14156, Declaring a National Energy Emergency, Develops Hydropower and Marine Energy Resources. And Executive Order 14179, Removing Barriers to American Leadership in Artificial Intelligence by Using Domestically Produced Energy to Use the Fuel Edge, to Fuel the Edge Data Centers of the Future. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Alaska Energy Authority as follows. The Alaska Energy Authority urges Congress to consider each existing energy tax credit for its ability to maintain and propel America and Alaska by spurring U.S. and Alaska new economic Alaska new domestic resource production and investment, and reducing utility bills for U.S. and Alaska consumers and resource developers, and creating certainty for Alaska energy developments that have already made strategic domestic investments under current tax credit structures. And two, the Alaska Energy Authority urges Congress to pass the Maintaining and Enhancing Hydroelectricity and River Restoration Act, House Resolution 2160 and Senate 1183, which supports additional tax credits for dam safety, recreational improvements, and fish passage for Alaska's current operating and hydropower systems and those in development. AEA appreciates that our entire congressional delegation are co-sponsors of this critical energy legislation that benefits Alaska, dated this day, April 17th.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Seidman.
This is Mr. Sheehan. I move to approve Resolution 2025-04 requesting Congress to support and maintain energy investment tax credits as presented.
Mr. Mitchell?
I'd like to second.
Have a motion and a second, a discussion.
Mr. Chair, can I?
Mr. Mitchell?
And yeah, I just want to do a housekeeping before discussing into the motion. Alaska hydropower is basically in Alaska's energy DNA, and you know, this legislation supports directly and indirectly any board member and or AEA in general that has any hydropower assets. I don't think that that's a conflict, but I just want to throw that out and put that into the public comment that whether it's a Klutna, whether it's anything with Bradley, whether it's whatever, there's indirect and direct benefits that would come from this legislation. And so the AEA support of that, I think, is generically good, but I just want to throw that out there.
Okay. Mr. Izzo.
Just curious, maybe a question for Curtis is, what was the impetus for this? Like, who drafted it?
As far as the drafting of it, it was a collective effort among staff and with some of the board members' input, because this is just critical at the point. The delegation is introducing this legislation, and we just want to make sure that we maintain the tax credits. There's, and I'll be straightforward, there's a couple of these tax credits where AEA is kind of on the edge or on the bubble in the sense of we're increasing Dixon, but we're not changing nameplate capacity on it. We're just increasing the water storage behind it. So we've been talking with the delegation about that, and what we wanted to show the support for the legislation that they have introduced and start there. And then obviously we have a couple of little tweaks that we would like to see that actually would benefit Dixon. And there's also an interpretation by the Secretary of Energy, I believe, that also, depending on his definition, the Dixon project could be put in there. And, you know, if it's 30%, that's $100 million. So we want to show our support to the delegation first and then work on the legislation.
Follow-up, Mr.
Thank you. Thanks, Curtis. That puts it into context for me. I think this is a good action for the board to take. I have to put it in perspective, though, since Aklutna was mentioned, the municipality of Anchorage and Native Village of Aklutna are trying to shut that down, which represents, that hydro is firm power, represents 44% of my organization's renewables. And in perspective, when I look at pending legislation for an RPS, representing over $50 million a year in penalties, which I think the latest CS has changed the word penalty to remittance, that somehow that will make us, you know, feel better about increasing our fuel costs, essentially in comparison by 20%. So I support this. I think there are other equally urgent and maybe even significantly more impactful issues before us in the state of Alaska. Thank you.
Okay. Further discussion, board? Mr. Seidman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I obviously support this. It's expanding our existing tax credits to, as Director mentioned, to more than just increase in energy, but all the attributes that are required in a hydroelectric facility that contribute to that energy. And so with that, the Bradley Lake diversion would potentially be included, which is a significant benefit to all Alaskans.
Great, thank you. Ms. Miller.
Jen Miller, I support this resolution. I think, you know, certainty and known defined law is critical for investment, and whether that be, you know, depending on how we finance these projects, really no matter what the flavor, knowing what the tax credits and the tax policy is critical for investment, and we need to know that today for investments that are, you know, we might make an investment decision in 1 to 3 years, but we need to know what the tax policy is today. And so maintaining the current with some enhancements to correct some, you know, minor errors that would allow for, you know, like Dixon diversion to get tax credits as well. Anyway, so I support this. I think it's important for us to weigh in and provide the delegation with the state's energy authority opinion so they can use that to support the legislation. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Mitchell.
Yeah, I support. I think the previous board comments I completely support those. They're very they explain it well. I would just add that, you know, the whereas is this is federally supported at the presidential or the administrative level. We have bills in Congress that supported with all of our congressional delegation. And I would just add a point that this was one of the last bills written by former Congressman Don Young. And so this is just a reintroduction of a bill that it was one of Don Young's last bills, and I think it has a lot of Alaska legacy based on that that's going in front of Congress now. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Sandy?
Yes.
Commissioner Crum?
Yes.
Mr. Mathiason?
Yes.
Ms. Miller?
Yes.
Mr. Seidman?
Yes.
Mr. Izzo?
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell?
Yes.
Chair Copeland?
Yes.
The motion carries, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Now, Director comments. Director Thayer.
All right, fair enough. This hopefully will go fairly quickly. Just in the board packet, we do have required statutory reports owed to the legislature. And so we have the annual report. It's online. We've submitted that to the legislature. In addition to that, our power cost equalization report, the PCE by community and by utility, was also done on time and distributed to the legislators. We did hard copies to the rural legislators and electronic to everybody else. There can also be found on our website. But that document alone is almost 200 pages long, and it captures all of the PCE from 2024. The next item in your board packet, which is under 9C, and this is just we've had a lot of conversations about pause, not pause, where we are with our federal funding. So we wanted to update this tracker to give an idea of where we're at with our funding levels. The only project that has been suspended has been the NEVI program, which is the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure. That actually on a nationwide basis was a $5 billion project. Alaska's share was $52 million, or AEA was working on the $52 million. But that was paused due to the fact that with the $5 billion, they managed to approve 52 charging stations in the country. So it didn't have really a robust outcome. And so that has been suspended until further guidance. And so, therefore, our work has been suspended on it. There is some state money, and we're working with DOT on continuing some of that work. But again, the bulk of the funding has been paused. With it, everything else in blue is moving forward. So that was the only one. So a little over $500 million in federal dollars, and so we're down to 460. So still quite a bit to work with. The other one is we did apply for a high energy cost grant through USDA for $2 million for rural Alaska, and we were successful on March 26 on receiving that $2 million award. There's a couple of conditional awards that we're still working out. They're on the smaller side, $500,000, $250,000. And then our Solar for All is proceeding. One thing I will make a caution on the Solar for All is that one, I think, was a question mark whether that would proceed on a national level. And so their deadlines are pretty strict. They want no amendments to the original award. And so we're meeting those guidelines, working with Alaska Housing as they're our partner in that. We're the lead agency. But moving forward on that, same goes for the two programs for $37 million each, one for high energy rebates and one for efficiency, working with Alaska Housing, proceeding on those, have MOUs in place, with those agencies along with RSA, reimbursable service agreements. And so everything is moving. We got restarted with the exception of the one program. The next item, which is 9C,
or one, is we did apply for the Office of Clean Energy Demonstration some funding, and there's awards up to $50 million. And so we did apply for that. The concept papers are due February 27th. Full applications are due on August 28th. And we're promoting four different projects. One being for Tok School, redesign and build for biomass, another one for Nome Joint Utility Systems, another one for Rural Systems, critical tool supply and inventory. And then the last one is for the Bethel to Oscarville tie line upgrade, which is an AEA asset that we didn't know we owned, but we found out that they were not transferred 30 years ago, and so we are the proud owner, continued owner of a tie line. And so we're doing the upgrade, and then eventually we'll be hopefully giving that back to the communities as we thought we did back 30 years ago. Next item under 9E is the Railroad Transmission Organization, is the RTO, and I would like to invite Karen Bell, who has been living, breathing this, and has just gotten out of a two-day, all-day meeting on the RTO, and then tomorrow the RTO will be meeting here in this room for at least up to 4 hours. So is Karen here?
All day.
Okay, you're right. Sorry, I do apologize. She texted me last night on the airplane and said, hey, where would you like me to be? So she's at the all-day RTO meeting, but that's proceeding on schedule. It is a July 1st deadline. I think as the closer we get, I think we're going to be moving a lot faster. There's still some large issues at the governance committee that the railroad CEOs and I serve on that we still have to make some decisions on. As far as the budget of that, we did in last year's budget for this year and next have a full-time person being Karen, and then also having a financial analyst, which we are in the market for, and bringing that person on board. And then we do have outside counsel working with us, and we do have a contractual appropriation for $500,000, and right now our costs we figure are going to be about $150,000 just on the attorney fees and financial consultant plus additional fees. So we're tracking on budget for that, but we do have a lot of work to do between now and the 1st of July. Next up, I would like to invite up Brian Carey, and I think that Jim is going to assist him on just giving you AEA-owned asset key updates. We do have three major projects going on. They're in various stages of construction. And also at this point, which I hate to say, but this is Brian Carey's last board meeting. He is retiring effective May 1st. And so hopefully he's going to enjoy his summer, get real bored, and I think we might see him back on Dixon Diversion, maybe in some capacity or not. But he is going to retire, unless he's looked at his 401k today and chose not to retire. But with that, Brian, would you take it away?
Okay. Thanks. I'm going to give a quick update on the owned assets, and when we get to the section in regards to the HVDC, Jim will talk about that, and then I'll talk into a little bit more detail on the Dixon Diversion and other projects. So first slide, or second one. This is just kind of what projects are moving slightly forward in terms of the rail belt. The ones that are green are in some form in progress, be it design or construction or otherwise. The other ones are not funded yet, and we're still and the in-progress ones are not necessarily fully funded either. But it gives us an idea of what we're looking at for moving forward on the rail belt projects to make it resilient and handle various new projects or incidences as it may be in the future. Okay. Next slide. And Jim on this one.
Good morning. Jim Mendenhall with AEA. Start off, as Director Thayer noted, that there were some pause on some federal programs as of early March, March 3rd. The DOE was able to discuss all projects. They still have a few things that they they're working through on some, so there may be some limited restrictions, but generally we are back in business working closely with DOE. We've been submitting invoices, they've been paying the invoices. And just as a note, from inception of the project through April 9th, AEA has spent about $830,000 on that project. On March 19th, AEA and the DOE held the actual kickoff meeting. DOE was very happy with the presentation. As part of our project management plan we submitted last year, we said around this end of April we would have a go, no-go decision, and most of that will be based on our Stantec report. They've been doing a preliminary work plan and a preliminary schedule. Right now we're in the receiving request for information from both HVDC converter on those and the cables, so we can make sure that we can do this on time and on budget. We're also working closely to say what are the options we can build in to, you know, either scale the project up and forward and back a little bit. And so our first budget period was from the ends on 6/30/2025. We're starting negotiations for the second budget period, will be the next two-year period. And so by that time, we expect it. And it, this depends on what we have to pay if we lock in material purchases or buy a production slot. But we expect to spend $80 to $90 million through that period. The state has obligated 62.7 to date, and so combined with the federal match, we have about $125 million. And it seems like that's acceptable to the Department of Energy. We've talked to them about, as Curtis noted, some of the previous financing options we've looked at. And I'll just give you a quick update on the Stantec. I think we might have talked about this before. We've talked about that. The line capacity will be about 200 megawatts using a bipole conversion. The monopole is a little cheaper, but the bipole has some redundancy. An initial environmental review has been performed. We're also thinking that we're going to have to submit alternate routes and back in around 2000, there was what was called a southern intertie that went across and down the coast. So we're getting some information on that, too, as an alternate path for when we get ready to do NEPA. With Stantec, we've worked on some in transmission links between Soldotna and Bernice Lake. And so we'll figure if that's exactly how much capacity there is, capability right now for transfer power and what we can do. What's needed now and what's needed when we hit 200 megawatts. And then we've done a preliminary design on the subsea cables. So we should, later this afternoon, we have a meeting with Stantec to get some of the information from their RFIs. And just the last thing I want to point out is Josie Hartley has been with the Alaska Energy Authority about 5 years. She's transitioning over to come over to the GRIP project, so we're happy to have her. And that was my report. Happy to answer any questions.
Board, questions?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I may.
Yes, Mr. Seidman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to back up just a little bit to the funding tracker. And so I've seen a lot of blue, which means that the program that may have been frozen has the funds that either been released or the program is unfrozen. My question for Director Thayer is, the federal buyouts are impacting the Department of Energy, at least that's from what I'm seeing. In particular for us, Section 247, although has been unfrozen, is not moving forward. The other one, so my question is AEA seeing any impact to the buyouts and the labor shortages for the GRIP program, and that's under DOE, and then also moving towards the EPA program, Solar for All? Is there any progress with that, although the funds have been released or unfrozen? Are we seeing any movement from those agencies, and is there anything we could ask our delegation to help with?
Let me just kind of take that in a more broad stance. We're not seeing anything. All of our project managers that we started with are still there. And so same thing with Solar for All, and same thing with the GRIP. And so those are two of our larger projects. So we're not seeing the turnover necessarily. I might add that this is not a political statement at all, but during the last 4 years, the Department of Energy staffed up over 20,000 people. So I don't know what the percentage of attrition through the buyouts are, but we're not seeing it. I'm going to look to Jim or Brian, but we're not seeing a change in who our contacts are within the agencies. And I would probably say this GRIP is more a high-profile project within it because of the support of the delegation and the need and President Trump's affinity with Alaska. And so we're kind of seeing that those issues not arising on these. So we do have one grant for $497 that we have not heard from our project officer on. But again, we don't know why, but that's only $500,000 only, but it's $500,000 grant and we have not heard from them. But my guess is that they have a lot more grants, and so that grant level is small enough that we'll hear from them eventually.
Mr. Mitchell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I really want to dive into the rail boat, but because another board member went back to the tracker, I just wanted to raise a question with the OCD. I know that there's been a lot of projected changes and a lot of projected differences of how DOE is going to be functioning forward, coming from the secretary on down, including executive orders. Is there any prognosis specifically on the Office of Clean Energy demonstration that is, you know, we have four projects that we've proposed for concept papers. Is there any visibility that you can give us or staff can give us on the security of that actual the Office of Clean Energy, where they're at, or is that to be determined?
I think that's yet to be determined, is because the interesting issue at hand was, I think from our perspective, is you had a pause on all federal funding that we had received funding for, had grant agreements in place, yet there was a part of the federal government that was actually still taking applications to hand out more money. And so we chose the path of, hey, we'll do the letter, you know, we'll do a submission, you know. It was just funny how one was pausing and the other one was still handing it out. So we have not seen what those results are of the submissions that we've had. And I think for us, we're just kind of waiting to see. It's kind of like the right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing, but we took advantage of both hands. So that one we've not gotten clear guidance on.
Thank you.
We continue to apply for money when they put the applications out.
Cool. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Other questions, board, on item D, the owned assets, item E?
He has that, and then Brian's going to do Dixon Aversion.
Okay, great. Topic. Okay, good.
All yours.
E2.
Okay, get on the Dixon Aversion, and one of the fun things about it is because it's a coastal glacier, it gets a lot of snow, and you know, people around Anchorage thinks that this is a low snow year, and the reality is we're about 30% above normal for the precip, and so it's below 2,000 feet. We've gotten a lot of rain, but up high, there's a lot of snow. So Alyeska, as of today, is up over 750 inches for the year, and it's probably very close number for the upper parts of Dixon Diversion. That, you know, during the last 2 days, it's been picking up. It's not inches, it's feet of snow, you know, like 3 or 4 feet of snow just within the last 2 or so days. So it will make a big difference come summertime. So we've been moving forward for Dixon Diversion on various environmental and engineering type efforts. Let's go to the next slide right here. This is completely alters it. It would be the Dixon Diversion around 19 square miles, and the whole Bradley area, I think, is around 80 square miles, but The important part about Dixon is it's high altitude mountain, coastal mountain. And so it actually averages over 100 inches of precip, liquid precip a year. So it will make a big difference in the water supply to Bradley. And then you go across by town over Bradley Lake, and we would raise the pool at Bradley Lake by an amount to be determined still. So we can go forward. So the licensing process really has a lot to do with how much water we receive from it. And we're down at that where that yellow is, and so we're fairly far along on it. This summer, well, we just held the meetings with the agencies to see if there's any new studies for this summer that has to occur for environmental. And it's pretty minimal difference that we have to do. It's pretty much what our original study plan is with a couple of minor tweaks. And what we found from last year's studies on terms of the fisheries is pretty much what we thought. You know, we've got our salmon there. We don't have too much else, a couple of sticklebacks and Dolly Varden, but that's it pretty much. So this year, the field season, actually, crews will be out for installing the water gauge stations next week. And then in May, the environmental crews will start going out there to be counting fish again and netting both juvenile and everything else like that. So once that's done, we'll meet again, well, about a year from now or less, maybe January or so, be able to put in the draft amendment application. And then what will come back from that after a few months will be the draft terms and conditions. And those are what will be really important to us, because the terms and conditions is what tells us what the in-stream minimum flow has to be, that when we have water going down the diversion, how much water do we have to have left on through the existing stream going down the Martin River. And they could put other things on there. They could tell you what color you got to paint it or other things like that. So, but we would be expecting by about a year from now, get the draft terms and conditions and then make some minor tweaks to what it is and put forward the final amendment application. And I will say that at least the meeting we had with the agencies the other week, we did bring up what we're kind of looking about for flows, for in-stream minimum flows, and we were not hearing, I don't know, any pushback on those flows, because those flows in Martin River would allow fish passage on up to the existing off-channel habitat that they use. So it should not reduce what the fish habitat would be that they can access. Next slide. Okay, so I've mentioned some about the environmental and hydraulic models and everything else for fish passage, to at least from our modeling, to show that with the proposed flows that they will continue to be able to access their habitat. Geology, last summer we did drill at both the tunnel inlet and outlet, and what's important is, well, it wasn't a surprise to us, but the rock is very similar to the Bradley Power Tunnel that they encountered when they did it originally. So it's, and that rock is fairly hard. It's a good quality rock. And actually, when they're drilling it back 30 years with a tunnel boring machine, they had at least one of the days they set a new kind of world record for how many feet forward they made in one day. So it's why we will be doing more drilling on that tunnel. At this point, things look good in terms of our understanding of what the rock is that we'll encounter. Hydrology-wise, we made some changes to our model from last year's water that was coming down. It's fairly small, and we'll keep on tweaking what those changes will be in terms of what we expect. And that what was done with the gauging last year is we tied it on the day amounts to Upper Bradley River, that we have 40 years of data on a daily basis, and then we come up with what kind of a mathematical equation between the two. And so then it allows us to come up with synthetic discharges for the last 40 years and get a good idea of what we can expect for extrapolating Dixon water in the future. And then earlier this spring, we had an additional project cost estimate completed by an engineering firm at Class 4. And they were ending up with the cost of construction is about $356 million. And so it's within the same ballpark. In Class 4, you've still got pluses and minuses, and you got different contingencies and, you know, plus 20 or 30% and minus the same thing. But they're still within the ballpark of each other. And as we move forward and move and get more to detailed design, we're going to be able to narrow that band of what the contingency amount is and narrow the plus or minus amount that would be for the project cost. So we also this spring, we had to do what was required by Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, have a board of consultants. And so we put forward different questions to them, and they have to pretty much sign off on it. Board of consultants are all engineers that have had maybe, 40, 50 years experience in terms of hydro or the subject matter that they're in. And so they reviewed our geotech drilling plan, program, the seismic hazard analysis, and the probable maximum precip that you can get. We are in the process of updating seismic and probable maximum precip for Bradley because the understanding of what the maximum precip and flood could be for Bradley has changed over the last 40 years. And unfortunately, the seismic analysis for South Central changed last year, and they upped the amount of ground motions that South Central could experience, which means Bradley could also get stronger ground motions than we'll see in terms of what it is. But and we're proceeding forward at this point with more design studies, taking a look at seismic on Bradley and the layout of the tunnel inlet outlet and diversion dam. So in 2025, upcoming activities, next slide. We'll have the environmental studies that will finish off the environmental, and all the environmental information will go towards the EA that the FERC, that FERC ends up doing at the end of this. And then we're going to drill around the dam itself. We need some more data for there. Move forward in terms of finishing up the seismic analysis and the hydrology, both the probable maximum flood and refine the energy estimates. And then in terms of the engineering, in terms of the advancing the design. One of the things that we will do in 2026, even though it doesn't quite show on here, is we'll go off and drill another one or two holes in the middle of the tunnel, which is they're going to be deep bore holes because the tunnel is about 1,000 feet deep. And so it's to gather information in the center of it right across where there's some liniments or faults or otherwise. And so, but we're pushing that to 2026 this summer. Next. So licensing and construction schedule, just broad base, we'd have the draft and final amendment application in 2026 and maybe right at the end of the year receive FERC's okay on that. At that point, they proceed forward to what the EA would be or EIS. And so in 2027, they'd be doing that. Another thing that we'd be doing is once we have the final terms and conditions, we would expect that they would come out where you have to have various plans that you need to submit, and there's you have to be able to put forward a goat safety plan, a bear plan, and other types of plans like that. Then we expect they're going to be very similar to what the Battle Creek plans were, and so we should be well. Hopefully, we can just take the Battle Creek plans and make some minor changes to them to deal with this project. And then 2027, at some point, be able to bid this in some way. And in 2028, do the access road off of Battle Creek Road to the outlet. So that's only a mile of road. And we'd also put in three-phase power that would run up from the existing Bradley Powerhouse up to the dam and up to Battle Creek, because we would like to be able to, the tunnel boring machine requires several megawatts worth of power. We would really like to be able to use power from Bradley to power that up instead of trying to haul up the mountainside 100,000 gallons every month or two through the wintertime. Because once you've got your tunnel boring machine going, you don't stop during the wintertime. And so hauling hundreds of thousands of gallons up a mountain icy road is just, it increases your risk substantially. And the other part would be is some of the improvements that the dam supply of power in the past has been pretty low voltage. And so we're actually reaching the maximum of what we can put for electrical equipment up there because it just wasn't built for too much. So once we have higher voltage, well, the higher voltage going up there, we can put much more in the way of equipment at the dam and improve Bradley Dam, have a better power supply. So we should be able to, about 2030, have the tunnel completed and diversion, and I think that we could probably get first water during it. And then 2031 is more likely to be finishing up the project where we could probably get water during, you know, we'll be able to get water prior to the entire project being completed. So, but there's always things that have to be done at the end. Okay, next one. This year we were working out in the field. Actually, the contractor was working out in the field starting in October to be putting in the foundations, and then we took an outage on the Sterling to Quartz line starting in early January. And because of the warm winter, that created a whole lot of problems for us just because we have a lot of wetlands that we need to be driving over, and you need that foot of frost, and we didn't have it. Everything was wet. And so then that caused us where we had to be putting up the different matting to drive on, which had a substantial cost because you got to be moving people and renting the matting. So our schedule for the rest of the SQ project is for that we'd be completed in 2028. Right now, the environmental assessment is being worked on by the Fish and Wildlife and the Forest Service, both of the two, and that is supposed to be completed by this October. And about October is when we would hope to be able to start, moving forward about the phase two in terms of getting, we should have the equipment on order by then, and then, let's see, 2025, 26. Most of the materials, such as towers, we need to order about a year ahead of time right now, and the conductor. And for next, a year from now, we're looking at doing, or at least HEA would be doing the Sterling to Soldotna section, and they just had their bids come back, and about a month ago, and the earliest they could get their equipment or their towers would not be until late January. So it puts a little bit of a schedule question in terms of their project when that will occur. So both schedule in terms of when things arrive and how much they're actually going to cost is a little bit more unknown in these. But we still plan to be able, we think we can still be finished with the phase three in 2028.
Question?
Yeah.
Yes, through the chair. Brian, talking about schedule makes me wonder if you could project a, you know, best case commissioned in service date for Dixon. What would that, you know, what would that look like?
If the Dixon schedule goes along, and if the agency type of permits or FERC moves along at a faster speed and doesn't sit for a long time, then we could get it where you could be having water at the end of 2030. And so I think the big impactful water would be in 2031 is when you have a lot more of the water that occurs.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Mr. Mitchell.
Yeah, I was holding off on questions, but going back to the Dixon diversion, what could be done to speed things up, tailing on board member Izzo's question? I know you're drilling, top down, and that's probably an engineering requirement. You know, in Southeast Alaska with the mines, they just add contingency and they don't do that extra drilling. They just drill the tunnel, and then if they find a weaker spot, they add into it, and it cuts off months and cuts off a whole drill season. I'm not saying to do that. I'm just saying that is like one idea. I'm just saying, what nuggets of potential have you looked at value engineering to try to, if there is any out there?
So, through the chair, the drilling would be going in parallel to the licensing type of work, and so that by us not doing the drilling and having a larger contingency doesn't necessarily save any time. Both the Board of Consultants mentioned about having a couple of extra holes for better understanding, and it's also, I know that one of the utilities has mentioned about their consultant believes that it's a better idea to get one or two holes to gather more information and have a little bit more certainty. So it will be, the drilling would not slow us down. We'll be able to use that for the detailed design and reduce our contingency and risk for any type of tunnel boring contractor. I think the biggest risk for schedule-wise is once it gets out of our hands and it goes over to FERC, I'm aware that for various reasons with FERC that they may take 6 months on what seems to be relatively simple questions or otherwise. And so between FERC and other agencies, it will be important that AEA keep on, I'm not going to say keep on the pressure, but essentially keep contacting them back and trying to make sure it moves forward once it goes forward to DC, because it's harder for us to control that. You know, detailed design, we have more ability to control our own schedule. But once it goes to DC, that's where we could get potential schedule issues.
Follow up? Yeah. If I may follow up, Chair. Yeah, the FERC permitting issue is a nationwide concern. Senator Sullivan has publicly stated, and I was talking to him on April 1st about the possibility of a FERC permitting legislation to help speed this up, because it's absolutely ridiculous how slow our country is comparatively to license. And if you look at the Trump orders, you know, they say the kinetic flow of water. So there's presidential and there's congressional intent to try to speed that up. That's not really in our control today. But one of the things that he did say is that you have to also be ready to accept that speed up. And so what he was talking to the industry, so to say, what could we do to speed up so on our end we're helping move that forward. That was kind of the nexus of my questions of is there any value engineering that we could to try to bring this online? Obviously, you know as well as I do that if you spend money or you speed things up, sometimes it radically reduces the cost. There's always that fine balance. So that was, you know, I don't know if you have those answers or if there's anything in that discussion with your Board of Consultants and with the engineers that you've brought on forward. I'm just hoping and thinking that, you know, if there's any value engineering that could be done to speed up the process, I'd give you the green light.
Through the chair, thank you. It's also another player would be the utilities that would be purchasing the power, so we're also listening to them. But we definitely try and get their input and be interested in moving how it moves forward and what they want to see. But at this point, as long as we're having the funding moving forward so that we're able, because the funding, by the time you ask for the funding and then you can deploy it, takes a certain amount of time for, you know, you got to be looking forward a year or otherwise. And so the fact that if the legislators and the governor passes the additional funds for Dixon will be important that we can proceed forward with more of the design type of work.
One last follow-up.
Yeah.
Follow-up is, you know, in my review of the ITC, sometimes it's helpful if you have an increase in nameplate capacity or you have some. I know in our previous discussions that tunnel is pretty, doesn't have much slope. If it was necessary, and now that I'm on the financing committee to help look at this, if there's, and ITC is a very important component, if there is any even minimal increase in nameplate capacity, it may allow ITCs to be more fully funded. Is there a possibility of increasing any nameplate capacity, even if it is minor? You're running up a three-phase line, so if even if you had a generator up at the elevation up there, that you could backflow the energy if you had a small turbine up there. Is that crazy, or is there a possibility?
Through the chair, I don't believe that it's... One is it's flat enough that any more losses on there is more likely to back up the water. And there's always the possibility that that tunnel, that we can get a certain amount of bed load coming down there. And then you've got the headache about some rocks coming down the tunnel during points where your turbines are. And so that isn't too good. And just by the amount of energy that we would actually produce with the amount of head behind it, it's unlikely that we really want to go spend $50 or $100 million to put an installation to generate there. So it's the tunnel where we're not going to have any generation or nameplate on that. And as it is right now with Bradley, it's unfortunate the nameplate with Bradley would stay the same nameplate.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Izzo.
Yeah, in along with the theme of Member Mitchell's comments, I strongly support, and I think AEA does too. I think we all do. Any acceleration of a project like this would, you know, we would want to look at all options. I think just for the record, though, as a monopoly, as a certificated utility, required to provide an essential service, for planning purposes, when I hear 2031, I say, great, that's better than other later dates. I'd like to be sooner. But we don't have the option, to put our strategy into hope, and we can't take that kind of risk that we won't have it. So the more certainty that can be provided, the better. I will walk out of here today thinking, okay, great progress. You all are doing a great job. But I have to provide firm power in 2031. And with long lead times, the amount of capital that's involved, I'm going to be making decisions years in advance of 2031 to ensure that I have that power. Now, what we'll do as a prudent operator is make sure that we can impart as much flexibility into whatever that portfolio looks like so that we can take the lowest cost firm power. But I think that sums up the comment. And I guess part of what I'm thinking about is I recall, I think it was Grant Lake, 5 megawatts, and it took 10 years to get a FERC permit. And, you know, again, hope is not a strategy. I'm so pleased to hear about Senator Sullivan and this push to redo things. But again, that's nothing that we can't say risk solved, you know, it's eliminated. And then 2031, when we're rolling blackouts, say, but, you know, we heard back when that these things might get resolved. So much support of what you're doing, and would be interested in looking at any and all options to get things accelerated. Thanks.
Board, since we're on a Dixon theme, any more questions, comments? I'll just throw in a couple. Thank goodness for Hellas Gears, because I got the same feedback in Cordova a month ago. I'm like kind of wringing my hands because there was nothing on the slopes, and they said, no, it's 130% up high. And I'll defer my other question I can ask offline, but there's always the X factor of hydro, too, in terms of schedule. Rule of thumb, expect flooding during construction and a drought after you're done. So thank you.
Okay. Yeah, and I will just here mention that the Battle Creek FERC permit, that process once we submitted took only about 2 to 3 years. And so there might be other projects that are slower for some reason, but we think that we can move this along on that. But we will work on other construction sequencing to be able to see if we could speed up the construction wise. So, reveal. No, this is good slide. So during this January and February, they were out there working, and the line was for that section was replaced to be able to handle 230 voltage there, and it passes 115. And so even though we're not going to be operating at 230 at this time, it will still be 5 or 10 years before it operates at 230. We're not sure exactly when. The larger line allows less line losses to occur. Mm-hmm. So it's just like the difference between a garden hose and a fire hose. And it takes a while to change out the line. Chugach is changing out their line. And when the line is completed changing out, then the transformers will be changed out so they can operate at 230. So I mentioned about the problem with the wet. We didn't really have the snow, we didn't have the ice, and you got a 90-10 crane that drives the piles. And so it increased the cost by 15% or otherwise. Otherwise, the bid cost was a decent number that we thought was, we were afraid that the contractor work would be more expensive than we thought, and it actually ended up as being good numbers. So next slide, I guess. So the work is finished on February 28th. They've still got to go in there and do a tiny bit of work later on this spring, but that might require a day outage or not here and there. But for the most part, it's all completed. The completed dead-end structure, you know, I'll just mention something about that, is that the line, when you've got towers going a long line, and if a line was to break, you know, the towers get held up because they're balanced with the weight of the line on both sides of them. And so there's been places where it's occurred before where one tower goes down and a whole bunch of towers go down because it's no longer a balanced load. And so when you get to corners or otherwise, there's a lot of guy lines, and so that they can stand on their own. And that way, if you do have a bunch of towers going down because of an unbalanced load, it gets to the corner of the dead-end type tower, and it stops there. And that was the last of them.
Any other questions, board? Anybody need a break for a minute or two? Okay.
I could take a break, but Brian, unexpected retirement. So who is your replacement, and how are you going to ensure that all these great projects that you've been working on get completed?
Would you like me to take that question, Brian?
Go ahead.
I don't think he has a care in the world in about 2 weeks. the way that it looks to be structured right now is since Josie has been officially moved over to the GRIP team and kind of seeing somebody who's going to see that through, let's just be honest, we don't expect Jim to probably stay till 2032. It's just my guess. So we moved, so that's the reason for moving, Josie over into that stage. But I have asked Jim to, if he would serve as acting for owned assets, for a period of time until we can identify a candidate to be the director of owned assets. Jim will still be responsible for the GRIP, project, and we'll go out to and see what we can do as far as a candidate. But I'm saying Brian's a walking encyclopedia. Obviously it's a great loss, but we do have a competent team behind him. We've been bringing up 3 different engineers behind him, to help with, the SQ work, to work on Dixon, and then when we have Jim, I think we have a pretty good team. It's just going to be a learning curve for us all, but we'll learn to live without Brian full time. And like I said, I think there might be something. Maybe this fall he'll come back to help us with Dixon Diversion to get across the finish line.
Thank you. I just want to personally thank you for all of your dedication and hard work with AEA over the years. I personally appreciate it. Could wait to direct your comments, but since you're up on the dais, so to say, I just wanted to get that out. So thank you very much, Brian, for everything you've done.
Thank you. And Ryan has been doing work on Dixon over the last year in terms of the environmental and engineering type stuff, and so has a very good knowledge of what's going on with both the engineering and environmental at this point. He's a lot of things that I'm not when I was young. He's smarter, more athletic, but, you know.
I saw Ryan's not here, and actually Patrick was here, but Patrick is been doing the work on the SQ line, and then Bill Price is doing a lot of our transmission, and Bill actually is in with the technical group on the RTO today with Karen. So stretched in, but just moving along in the agenda, for time, unless you want to see it, we have kind of upgraded the GRIP HVDC submarine cable. It's still 3 minutes. It's what we've used. We've played it a lot down in Juneau. It's been, I say, new and improved since the version you saw. If you want to see it for 3 minutes, we have it. Or we can move on, and you can look at it on your leisure on our website. Your choice.
Leisure.
Okay, leisure it is. Then I will also say we have updated the Dixon Diversion Project video also, and leisure. At your leisure. Not a problem. Next item is 9F, which is just an update, and this is actually something Bill Price has been working on, but we notified you that we did have avalanche damage to the Alaska Intertie Structure 616, and where we had an avalanche on January 24th, about 8 miles north of Cantwell. The preliminary estimates for the cost is about $500,000, and they'll probably extend into the Internet Management Committee, the IMC budget, for that. There was a February 7th, January Interior Winter Storm Declaration issued by the governor. So AEA is working with GVA to submit a request for a new declaration through the State Emergency Office to help cover this and hopefully those expenses. I did include, which is a picture's worth 1,000 words, but there's some actual pictures of the damage. And if you can imagine the size of that pole, and then the pole itself, the structure, and then you actually see the people on the boulder that hit it. A little bit, and that one straight line, that's the brace. but clearly this goes to show we needed the redundancy, because the chances of that line going down, not only would have taken that pole down, but most likely the poles on either side of it. So we've got to look at it from that aspect. It's just not one. It could have been much worse. But you can go look at just look at the damage to it. It's pretty amazing. And then the last picture, there's the structure, there's the pole, and then you can see the backhoe next to it, which is, again, putting it in perspective. But hopefully we'll have some pictures as they do the repair on it, and hopefully have the funding covered. Yeah.
Tony. Chair, yeah. Curtis, thanks for that. I'd seen those pictures. They tell the story. I think though, for the record, it's important to note when there was gas available, that line provided gas-fired generation north to Fairbanks or Golden Valley Electric Association, saved them approximately $40 million a year in fuel. Unfortunately, we're in a situation where that's not happening. That ceased on January 23rd of this year. But when we talk about other projects like the large wind projects being proposed by Matt Perkins and that team, we've got serious issues. We, for instance, to get to the economy of scale, want it to be 120 megawatts. That line in and of itself, plus the need for 138 kV line is what's required to get to 60 megawatts. The second line would be required to get to the 120 megawatts. And, you know, it's part of the, you know, not to keep touching on the RPS, but, you know, there's realities based on the laws of physics, logistics, and economics, system constraints that make some of that policy, just absolutely absurd. We're looking forward to solve those problems. We've been working with you and your team for years to do that, and greatly appreciate it.
No, thank you. And keep in mind that power is from Bradley going up those lines right now, so that really could have been an issue. Next item is just a net metering incentive payment pilot program. The governor's office had requested us to look at to create and implement and administer a net metering incentive program. The program was to establish several purposes. There are 1 through 6 listed out here, but it was to encourage, whether it be solar, wind, hydro, some encouragement and actually help cover those costs to the utilities. And so we did make this proposal. Connor's been working on it for a long time, did make the proposal to the governor's office, and they were receptive that this is what he had in mind. We have sent over MOU with the governor's office because they're going to actually give us money to do it. They're going to do an RSA, reimbursable service agreement, but that has not been signed, and we don't have the MOU. It's pending in their office, but I anticipate that's going to be kicked loose, and it will be, and this program will last as long as the funding does. So, next item on 9H is just a snapshot as far as our Power Project Loan Fund. You don't see this in every board report, but we do have a balance of $31 million that we have outstanding in 15 different PPF loans. We're at 100. There's a little bit of a late fee in there, but our interest received during this period was over $300,000. And so the program continues to provide benefit, and we have no delinquencies on it, so very good on that aspect. And then we have about $9.7 million available, and we can loan up to $5 million without going to the legislature. It's $0 to $2 million for staff or for our internally, and then it's $2 to $5 million to the board and anything over $5 million. And so we do have some people interested in applications, so depending on the size, we might actually see those coming.
And those are pretty secure funds, that balance?
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Yes, I mentioned it, but yes, I think they're secure. No, there's a lot of support in the legislature for recapitalizing. It's because a lot of the rough funding that actually needs funding to go into the next step, this is the next viable step, is this particular loan fund.
Okay, yeah.
And we provide patient capital, and it's actually less than the market right now.
That's why I ask.
Yeah.
I think it could be see some activity. Thank you.
Yeah. The next item, and Leonard is actually on an airplane. Leonard Robertson is our Chief Information Officer with IT. We had talked about it earlier in our more meeting in January, but we're doing a lot of projects. We're doing a phone system upgrade. We're doing an email system migration. We have a server in the basement that is sitting next to the sump pump. And so we have really made a push to go to the cloud. And so we're doing that, and we're doing it in consultation with Ada, since we both share the building. But eventually, I think there's going to be a conversation, if it hasn't already been had, about getting your middle initials so we can swap the emails, even though we'll forward your old emails without it. But we're making that swap. We're also going to get our own block of phone numbers. So we'll forward into our current phone numbers here at the building, but we'll have, for new employees, they'll have new phone numbers. Therefore, that if we were to move buildings or something like that, we're separate. And right now, we share a common incoming line, and so we're going to have two different lines, one for AEA and one for ADA. So we're making those improvements. And then also with our accounting software, Navision, uplift Navision to a new system. This is our system right now is going to expire in October 25, and so it's our goal by July 1st to get this, to get everything kind of moved over so it's being built. We're doing this also with ADA, but we're doing two separate corporations. So we're right now combined, so we're splitting them out, and we're going to have our corporation, they'll have their corporation. But our goal is to have that done by this fall due to the deadline. And this, we do have funding in the legislature that so far is secured to do this work, because we reappropriated some old money to help cover these costs, as well as our lease and just administrative costs. And these are one-time costs. And actually, long-term, it's actually going to be cheaper when we actually migrate, because licenses, phones, everything is a lot cheaper now from our old system and our old architecture. The next items just in your board is our legislative submittals, which are statutorily required by reports. These are after the last board meeting, so if you want to peruse them, you're more than welcome to. And it also includes the REF submittal that we did by community with the additional background. The governor's budget includes $6.3 million, which does not fund all the projects. It only funds six projects. And so if you look at your board package, you'll see an orange line. If there's additional funding, we just move that line down. If there's less money, we move that line up. But this Senate budget includes this funding as far as what the governor's request was. So that's good for that part. And whether that number has changed in the legislature, I think we've yet to see that. Next item we have is our legislative updates. And these, all of our presentations are online, so you can be more well to peruse them. We've done House Finance, we've done Senate Finance, we're doing House Community Regional Affairs. We've been to the Energy Committee probably more than I'd like to be and probably go back again. So there's all those are here. And then, our community outreach, continue to do a lot of the community outreach. And we just want to, we kind of keep a log of a 6 months so you kind of see who's done it, what we've done. And again, it's all kept on our website. This morning, I spoke at the Resource Development Council this morning, I guess about 120 people, on AEA and everything that we're doing. So, and we showed the videos and I think they're well received in kind of showing what we do. But if there's something here you don't think or we should be doing or not doing, let me know and we'll adjust accordingly. And then the last item here is our articles of interest. And this is just stuff that's been in the news that wanted to kind of highlight where we're mentioned by name, all in a good light. And I will touch on just right before the last thing is with the budget is concerned, the House operating budget is basically intact of everything we asked for or we requested through the governor's office. And our capital budget, which is over $60 million, has also been accepted by the Senate and is in the Senate budget. The only reduction was $500,000 for Bradley Lake. But we do have with the utilities, with this board's permission in January, we move the interest payments that we could use that to offset some of the Dixon cost. And so, it's a $12.5 million is what we needed. We have six already, through the interest. And then if the state provides the six, we're at $12 million. And so $500,000, of course, Brian's left the table and retiring, but he says that's not a problem. So we should be in a good light there. And I guess with that, we do have the next regularly scheduled AEA board meeting on Thursday, July 10th, 2025.
Okay, board will have an opportunity for director comments, but any comments or questions on any items in the director's report? Tony, yeah.
Just a comment, the amount of outreach, the quality of it is commendable. Curtis, you, your team. I know there's lots of travel, takes you away from the office, and emails pile up and phone calls and those kinds of things, but I think you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
I'd just like to second that, too, and I see some weary staff out in the audience and know that they've been out advocating and protecting grants and looking for new ones and long flights and very sporty, turbulent flights some nights, and so yeah, I want to concur with that comment and appreciation.
One thing I didn't mention, and I will, is what we've kind of discovered is going to Bradley is our biggest advocate, especially down in Juneau. And so with that, we will be starting, flights up again. We'll do a tours of Bradley in June, and I also, we've scheduled a plane for the day before the board meeting. So if there's a board member that hasn't, I don't think, Jen, you've been down there to Bradley. We want to make sure you get on that aircraft. And then what we're doing is we invite legislators because, you know, so far we've had the Speaker of the House. We've had the co-chairs of House Finance, everything. So when we come down to Juneau and talk about our budget and our needs, they've seen it. They understand it. And we've met with, I think, 50, Tim and I and almost 60 legislators. And so we do that, but just I'll send you out some dates that if you're available, we want to make sure you're on the flights to Bradley. And when we say that, there's only 8 seats on the plane. So it is rather tight seating in that regard.
Thank you. Tony.
Yeah, I did think of another comment, and so this is more of a proposal for, you know, for the board and the executive director. The Renewable Portfolio Standard Bill, HB 153, has been, you know, mentioned in connection to a few things. I'll make some comments and in board comments about, you know, my thoughts on it, but it does purport to lower costs, and then there are those of us that believe it's going to, you know, greatly increase costs. Is it something that for future board meetings we could have a tracker on under, you know, director comments, the status of that bill, along with maybe gathering some financial, you know, data?
I don't see that being an issue. Matter of fact, what we'll do is for the July board meeting, we'll have an update on any legislation where AEA is named or a party to, because even the RPS bill, we do have a bill analysis and a fiscal note in on that. And the latest, I don't think it's been introduced, but my understanding is a CS that's now going to have AEA be holding the fines at some stage, which is new to us. We weren't asked. We weren't consulted. We were heard this might be out there. So, we're tracking them. So we'll share all that tracking information with you and have it for the board.
Okay, thank you. Other questions, comments for the director of board? Mr. Mitchell.
Yeah, my question is I think we have a great story to tell. AEA is doing a great job. Also want to reiterate, you know, you're representing all the staff and the board well in front of the legislature. We have the Alaska State Energy thing coming up.
State General Energy hosted by the governor. Yes.
Right, correct. I got the acronym. I said it wrong. Yep. I saw the emails. I would encourage the board to go, but what roles will AEA be playing in?
AEA has historically been on the planning committee, and so we do hold that role. Brandy's been doing that, and then in addition, I'm at the podium, and then I was asked to go on the trade mission to the United Arab Emirates with the governor. Now they're bringing a delegation over, so I have my own people I met over there who will be meeting over here. And quite frankly, they want to invest in projects. And so that's one of the ones that are mystery projects, I should say, or the other out there. So we're very much involved in that. And then I should bring up, and I didn't, and that was the following weekend, the National Association of State Energy Offices are going to have their Western Region meeting in Alaska for the first time. And so there's about 50 people coming to Alaska. AEA is hosting them. It was an invitation given to them several years ago that they're taking us up on. And so that is the immediately following the Governor's Sustainability Conference. And so we'll make sure that you guys are included, I'm sure, and we've asked the governor. And so there might be opportunities that maybe you guys can be a guest speaker or somebody on a particular subject matter. But they're going to be here for 2.5 days.
Thank you, and I really appreciate, you know, we're at a cutting edge point in time with the unleashing of Alaska's energy resources and resource development. So appreciate again everything you're doing with that.
Okay, thank you. And not seeing further questions, we had the executive session on the that was on the agenda. We had that executive session. No need for another. Don't have anything on the agenda published there. So we'll go ahead with board comments. And I'll start online, Mr. Seidman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say and reiterate that, Curtis, your staff and you guys are doing awesome. You guys are killing it. I see this board packet. There's a lot that you've got going on, and obviously you're losing staff, so I think that you're going to be looking to try and build staff, I'm hoping. And then I'd be curious on thoughts of going into the future on potentially getting AEA into its own building. Other than that, great meeting, guys. I really appreciate it and look forward to the next one.
Thank you. And Commissioner Sandy, and we know how busy you are this year, we really appreciate you participating in the meeting, and would welcome any comments you had.
Well, thanks. I just wanted to thank the AEA staff, and that was a good board meeting, lots of content, and I really appreciate the conversation. Thanks.
Thank you. Ingemar.
Great meeting and good conversation. Very nice update. Appreciated everything. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Miller.
Yeah, thanks for the great meeting. Really appreciate all the work by the staff and Director Thayer. It's, yeah, the work that you do is commendable and very professional and organized, so thank you very much. I was just going to make a comment. I'd also like to recognize HR Director Karen Turner for completing the employee pulse survey. We've yet to discuss that at the personnel subcommittee, but just want to say thanks for getting that done and very nice effort there. And then, yeah, my other, I guess, just a prompt for the personnel committee to get a meeting date and time on the books for us to just discuss those survey results and then follow up on. We worked on the form for the performance evaluation for the executive director, but need to get that set up for this evaluation cycle. So thanks.
Thank you for that reminder. I'll scratch it off my list. Mr. Rizzo.
Thank you. I'd like to echo the other comments. I do think it's worthy of pointing out what I think is the most significant immediate pending issue that could negatively impact rates for two-thirds of the state of Alaska's population, and that's House Bill 153, Renewable Portfolio Standards. Required, if passed as is, 40% renewable by 2032, 55% by 2035. The rail belt is currently at about 15% renewable. For my own utility, Matanuska Electric, we would have to find a way to shift 312,500 megawatt hours over to renewable in that period of time, where we face $10.2 million of the approximately $55 million per year penalty based on a $45 megawatt penalty plus inflation. So $45 per megawatt is the fine as of today. By it time it were to take effect, I don't know what the dollar will be worth, you know, in 2032, but it's a pretty significant increase. It's understandable why there would be those that, you know, for-profit entities that would like to shift or impose economics in their favor. What we have seen is clearly a concerted effort to keep the utilities or any real energy expert from testifying. We've been blocked from doing that by House Energy. Testifiers are brought in without disclosing that they're for-profit entities. There was one independent power producer who I respect, but I think ethically should have said that this bet would benefit his entity. They brought in a Hawaiian, the chief energy officer, Mark Glick, from Hawaii, who testified about their RPS to be net zero or 100% renewable by 2045. What he did not say is that 47.44% of Hawaiians don't have heating systems. He did not say that the average temperature throughout the year is 78 degrees to 85 degrees. He did not address the subarctic and climate like we have. He also did not testify to the fact that the governor, Josh Green, has tasked him to develop a new energy strategy to address electricity costs and the increasing unreliability of Hawaii's firm power generation. And the conclusion from that chief energy officer who testified in favor of Alaska's RPS is the only one in the near term, the only option in the near term that could meet all those criteria is importing LNG. I've got a couple other bullets. As you can tell, I'm passionate about this. We keep hearing a lot in testimony about the NREL study. We don't hear from those in the NREL study that are cherry-picking things that will advantage their special interests. Is that NREL has said co-ops don't get fined or penalized because it raises rates for the member. They don't say that the NREL study did not perform the necessary stability analysis, as actually noted in the executive summary of the study. They don't acknowledge the transmission needs within the regions that would even facilitate the ability to do some of these things. It assumes a unified system operator. Would love to see that. I've done that with Chugach Electric. We're a single load balancing area, but you can't do it without hundreds of millions of transmission infrastructure, and that in no way has been acknowledged. The NREL study results are driven by power consumption estimates. This is in the study. That assume growth in generation, growth in demand by 2040 of 110,000 EVs or 700 gigawatt hours of additional load. I think things have changed right now, and maybe they'll change again with EVs, but I'm not so sure that that's a relevant. I think it's a relevant fact of this study that is not being disclosed as it should be. And then just in closing, it assumes pricing, the NREL study assumes pricing information for wind projects that we know is not accurate. We see wind prices from Level 10's report on the average of the most efficient 25% of projects in the lower 48 for 2024. And they're 42% higher than the NREL report. And I can't say it because I'm under NDA with a project here that I would love to see go forward, but that 42% is about half the price I'm seeing here, and I don't have the transmission to get it online. So with that, I'll just close this by saying I just can't imagine a more ridiculous threat at the worst time when we're trying to ensure that we can keep the lights reliably on. I'll just conclude with that. I won't ask for, folks to call their legislators, but if you need phone numbers, I'll be glad to find them.
All right, Mr. Mitchell.
Thank you. I won't reiterate all my laurels to the staff and to the executive director for continuing to drive this organization forward to meet the future. In that, with the future, my compatriot here mentioned EVs. I think data centers are going to change the world. Every white paper I've read from every investment group it's going to be a phenomenal change. And they're not just looking at the 1 gigawatt or the 100 megawatt facilities, but with the edge computing and the spider web of the web, where you have decentralized data security, is going to provide opportunities for resource development in Alaska. The other thing that I'd like to mention is that there is a growing need for permit reform at the federal level, not only at the presidential level and the admin level. I think FERC is recognizing that the Federal Power Act needs a revamping. And we need streamlining from the input of agencies that are in the EIS or the EA program. And so I would ask that we monitor that and maybe we be proactive being in Alaska, because we have such a important resource development opportunity that we may be asked to provide input for that. And then lastly, with my affiliation with the National Hydropower Association, there will be, it sounds like, additional executive orders related to energy. And I would just like to, being in part of that hydropower industry, the kinetic flow of water is listed in the Trump executive orders, and that includes our marine energy industry. So tidal, hydrokinetic, and hydropower. So I think the future is bright if we look at certain things. We see the negatives on the others, and I think that our AEA staff and our board's ready to grasp those continuous changes and go forward. Thank you.
Thank you. And I just want to extend my appreciation to the board and the staff kind of this way. I think, you know, disagreements at this table and stuff represents a diversity of the board and is good and how we come to solutions. But what I really appreciate is everything the board contemplates, including some, you know, external disagreement on who owns what and so forth, is all focused on how does this affect the cost of power to Alaskans. And I think that focus, even at the AEA staff and board level, is something I've been excited about and talk about. And I think, you know, on the, for the record, I'd like to extend appreciation to our legislature. You know, they said energy was a priority this year, and supporting these capital investments, these aren't expenses. There's a return on these investments in the form of customers' energy bills, and they're putting the money where the mouth is in a really tough environment. So between that and the governor's office and his work, it's good that we're doing this for Alaska. And I had a chance to attend that Resource Development Council this meeting this morning. I think 160 might have been shooting kind of short for the attendance. A lot of energy represented, but a lot of the private sector and industries in Alaska. And Director Thayer represented the AEA very well. I spent a lot of my time looking around the room, watching the people, watch the videos, listen, had their absolute 100% attention, and I saw a lot of head nodding, and there were a lot of good questions afterwards, which I think is a litmus for a really good engagement. So thank you. Great job representing AEA and Governor's office and our mission. So that's all I had. One more motion. I think. Get down to the agenda. Yeah.
Jen Miller, motion to adjourn.
I'll second the motion.
Motion and second to adjourn. Any objections? Hearing none, we're adjourned. Okay.